Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. Oh, I'm so glad you're listening today. This show originally aired on the premier networks, including KFI in Los Angeles, KSFO in San Francisco, and all over the country, on Saturday, August 5th, 2017. This is episode 1410. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage, so you can apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, so build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/techguy. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/techguy and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, computers. That sounds so old-fashioned. Computers, computing machinery, the internet, the web of inters that are the net. But also smartphones, which is a computer, I guess. Your smartwatch, which very few people have. Although I see more and more Apple Watches around, and Apple says sales have increased 50% this quarter. Oh, 50% over what? We don't know. If it was 2, that would mean 3. If it was 200, that would mean 300. I don't know what 50% means because they didn't say the base number. Clever of them. It's like Twitter. Twitter said the same thing about daily active users. They've increased. I think it was even 50%. But again, they didn't say from what. It's a little game people play in their financials. We also talk about virtual reality, augmented reality. You know, that's those glasses that you wear. Apple's all in on augmented reality. Boy, Tim Cook was excited about that on his quarterly analyst call. He said, I can hardly stand it. It's so exciting. And a stock went up because everybody says, oh, the next iPhone, it's going to be something cool and new. Yeah. Maybe. Not that new. We've had this for a while, augmented reality. Yeah. Not in your pocket, but yeah. What else? Home theater? Sure. Digital photography? Yep, you bet. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, comes up in about half an hour talking about home theater. Are you in the iGen? There's a new... When I posted this on Twitter few days ago, people got mad at me and said, oh, do we need labels like the baby boomers, the millennials, the Gen Xers, all of that. Now, the iGen, well, yeah, maybe not, but it does kind of help to understand a little more about this generation that grew up with smartphones. That's what we're calling the iGen. So they're pretty young still. They would be early teens. A 16-year-old would have had access to a smartphone at the age of 6. So she'd be an iGener. The iGen. Are you in the iGen? We've had a slew of articles over the last 10 years bemoaning the millennials. Well, if you thought that was bad, get ready. Laura, a big article by Gene Twenge in The Atlantic, titled, Have Smartphones Destroyed a Generation More Comfortable Online Than Out Partying? Post-millennials are safer physically than adolescents have ever been. That's because they never leave their bedrooms, apparently, according to this study. But they're on the brink of a mental health crisis because they're depressed. You know, my own personal experience, I have a 14-year-old at home, is that it kind of confirms this a little bit. Now, I don't know. I'm curious what you think. You know, I'm a baby boomer. So when I grew up in the 70s, early 70s, So I graduated from high school in 73. It was all about rebellion for us, right? Getting out of the house, and you got the driver's license the minute you could and all that. And I noticed with my kids, who are millennials, 25 and 22, the 25-year-old couldn't wait to get her driver's license and was devastated when she took her test and didn't pass it the first time. On the other hand, my 22-year-old, just 3 years difference, he didn't get it till he was about 18. He couldn't really care less because we drove him everywhere. But I think that there is a generational difference. Even 3 years is a generational difference. And he's kind of, let's see, eight. He was 22. He probably is almost iGen, right? So they've been studying these kids, iGens. They're not getting jobs so much. For instance, in the late 70s, 77% of high school seniors had a job during the school year. 40 years later, only 55% did. And it's accelerating. The iGens apparently spend a lot of time looking into screens, not TV so much as computers and more than that, even smartphones, more than tablets, smartphones. They don't hang out with friends so much. When they go to the mall, remember going to the mall, kids? Everybody went to the mall. When they go to the mall, they go with their parents. They go less and less with the friends or by themselves. They are driving at a later age. They're dating at a much later age. And if you look at the graphs in this Atlantic article, they put on the graph, they could put this line where the iPhone was released in 2007, and you could see the dramatic drop in dating. In sex, they're sexually active later. See, all of these things, some parents would say, wait, that's what's wrong with that? But then there is some bad stuff. They're more likely to feel lonely. Big spike in that metric since the iPhone came out. Big spike. A third often feel lonely and often feel left out. They're less likely to get enough sleep. Does your teenager, your preteen, sleep with their phone in bed? Ours does. We have to take it away from them. Now, I know, and when I posted this again, people say, oh, let's not create labels. Yeah, and you're right. You know, this is all generalizations. Every kid's different. Every person's different. And they said, we shouldn't shame them. And after all, didn't they say the same thing about kids playing video games and kids watching TV? I know my parents said, you can't watch more than half an hour of TV a day. Oh, that was terrible. Because there were two shows I wanted to watch. And I couldn't watch an hour long. My Man from U.N.C.L.E. was an hour long. Couldn't watch that. So they were worried then. And, you know, somebody pointed out people were worried that kids would spend too much time reading books 50, 60 years ago. Too much time reading books. Oh, I wish they'd read books today, don't you? And she's very quick to point out in her article in The Atlantic that it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's neither. It's just an observation about how young people are growing up. And like anything, there's positives and there's negatives. I remember my friend John said his teenager was a better driver because he'd spent his youth playing driving games on the computer. I don't know if that's true. What do you think? I like the name the iGen. I'm gonna give Gene a credit for that. Gene Twenge, get credit for the iGen. But and I think that these observations are, at least are accurate with the early teens that I know, my son's friends. That's spent a lot of time in front of that screen and a lot of time in their room and less time going out. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, the county fair's in town, the Sonoma County Fair. We said to Mike, you want to go to the fair? No, I just want to stay home. His friends called. You want to go to a movie? No, I'm just going to stay home. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. I mean, the millennials grew up with the web, But the difference is with the iPhone and the smartphone, it's not just growing up with the web. It's with you at every moment of night and day, all the time. In 2017, a survey of 5,000 American teens found out that 75% of them, 3 out of 4, owned an iPhone. Not just any phone, an iPhone. And that's why Apple is soon to be a trillion-dollar company. And this Apple stock price went up, and people are all excited about augmented reality. Ooh, really? A reality? I can use my phone, and that'll be reality? You got it. Bingo. What are we going to call the next gen? I don't know. The iPhone gen. 8888 Ask Leo. Remember, did you ever have, are you old enough to remember? Stop reading and go out and play. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sybil praises her Apple overlords at her Apple altar, deep within her Apple-walled garden. Life is good in the Apple Unimatrix, where resistance is futile. If less than one ohm. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. And joining me now, Kim Schaffer. The phone gal.
Smooth jams. On a
smooth Saturday jams. Yeah, it's a beautiful Saturday morning and smooth jam.
There you go.
KLEO. And now let's go to our traffic gal, Kim. It's a weekend. There's no traffic, is there?
No. That's not true.
Oh, I know. It's bad. We live in a touristy area, so the traffic getting here is bad, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. It's gotten worse over the past few months, I've noticed, too. I used to fly up here. Now I got to make sure I leave an hour.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that.
Yes, of course.
So that means you got here at 6 this morning.
6.
And you've been slaving over a hot phone.
These callers have been on hold for 5 or 6 hours.
No, I hope not.
No.
They're going to be, though.
Yeah.
So who should I start with here?
Mike in Fremont has a video surveillance question.
Oh, all right. Mike in Fremont. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim.
Morning, Leo. I have a Swan 16-channel surveillance camera.
Yeah.
And typically the hard drive records for 7 days.
Yeah.
And I would like to figure out how can I increase the recording time up to a month?
Well, let's see. I would say quadruple the size of your hard drive.
So is that an external hard drive? I would just loop to it?
I am not familiar. So I know the Swan cameras. Does it have a its own hard drive that it's recording to, its own device?
Yes, it's a 1 terabyte.
Yeah, and it's inside a box, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the question is, can you upgrade it? Now, you know, I would say if Swan's not taking any effort to prevent that, you can. But it may be that they haven't, you know, TiVo does this and other devices do this. They may have locked it down to make it so that you can't easily upgrade it. So I think the question here is can we upgrade the Swan hard drive? Let me just do a quick search. You know, I bet you can. Let's see. Yeah, can I? Yeah, it says it. Actually, Swan encourages this, apparently. So you have to look at which DVR you have. And if you have a connector at the back, do you have a SATA, eSATA connector, or some sort of a USB?
Well, my next question is, I have everything working, but I haven't been able to get it up to the internet, and I'm not sure what I need. I have my internet access.
Well, that's a different question. So the physical device you're recording to, the DVR you're recording to, came from Swan, correct?
Yes.
You have to look at it. For instance, I'm looking at a page that says the DVR 83000 can be upgraded using the eSATA port. That's a hard drive connector on the back, so you just get an external eSATA drive and add it, and they encourage it. In other words, the eSATA connection will have a different role depending on which revision you have. It's important to establish the revision you have in order to take the procedure. Blah blah blah. So this is on the Swan website, support.swan.com. So it looks, it really depends on the DVR. It looks like Swan doesn't mind you upgrading your capacity. Sometimes companies, and I think this is reprehensible, will say, oh, no, we're going to lock this down. You have to buy a bigger DVR from us, or you have to send it back for an upgrade, or you can't upgrade, or that kind of thing. It sounds like on the Swan, you can either install a bigger internal hard drive, or if you have the right DVR, you can add it with an eSATA port, you can add an external drive. So look on the back. The eSATA port's kind of funny look. It's not something you've ever seen before. It doesn't look like USB or FireWire. It's kind of flat. But if you have one, you know, Google eSATA port, get a picture of it, Google image search, and then look at it and look at it in the back of your system if you have it. I'll put a link to this in the show notes at techguidelabs.com. So the next question is, how do you get it on the internet?
Yes.
Well, that's up to Swan whether they allow that or not. That's a little bit more complicated. Generally, my recommendation, you can go two ways with security cameras. You get more recording capacity, and you have more control over it if you get one that has it like the Swans that have a DVR system. You don't even have to. You know, we use cameras of a mixed bag of cameras, including some Axis cameras that also record locally, but they record to a Synology NAS. They're not made by the camera manufacturers, but we record locally. If you record locally, a few advantages to that. One is these cameras, if you have more than one, can really eat up bandwidth. You know, if you're sending out a high-definition stream, you're talking a megabit or more per camera. And so pretty much you can eat up your upstream bandwidth pretty quickly if you decide you want to have them online. And then, of course, you have to set up cloud storage, and that, you know, that's going to depend on the kind of camera and the setup. It's very easy. That's generally the kind of the way you do that. And I, for instance, have Nest cameras set up from the Google's Nest company, and those don't offer DVR recording. Those record to the Nest cloud, and that has disadvantages and advantages. A disadvantage besides bandwidth is it costs you a monthly fee, $10 per camera to store. I want to say a month. Might be just 10. Maybe it's just 10 days. So you have an ongoing cost if you do it that way. But there's no hardware in the house. You don't have to wire it and all of that stuff. So getting your Swan system up on the internet, I don't know how doable that is. You'd have to do it with the cooperation of the Swan folks, I guess. Because these aren't internet cameras. They're not Wi-Fi cameras. They're cameras designed to record locally. Somebody in the chat room saying, you do not need cameras in your home. Well, that's my wife's position. She made me take them out. It's one of those things, you know, I never had cameras, but I tried, because I review them all the time. I have the Nest cameras. I tried the Ring cameras and so forth. And there's a getting... I understand, like, for our business, we have cameras. Because if anything happened, then you'd have a record of it, right? And I guess it's probably more likely that something's going to happen to a business than it's going to happen to a home, I would guess. But if you lived in a dangerous neighborhood, it wouldn't prevent something bad. But at least you could keep an eye on things. And if something bad happened, you'd have a record of it. That's the theory, right? That's why convenience stores have cameras and recorders. But it has a negative psychological impact in your home. A, you've got these cameras staring at you. That's what drove my wife crazy. Little camera eye just looking at you all the time. She was nervous because it was uploading those to the internet, and I don't blame her. So that's a little bit of an invasion of privacy, right? And the other thing it does, because they give you notifications on your phone or your computer, is it kind of makes you paranoid. There's somebody in your backyard. It's just a cat. There's somebody in your front yard. There's somebody in your living room. It's literally on these Nest cameras. They thought the party balloons. We had some Mylar party balloons. And they thought that was a human in the house. There's somebody in your house. Oh, no. And you get the notification. You go, oh, what's going on? And you hit it, and it's a bunch of balloons. On the other hand, having those cameras could be a deterrent. And certainly, you know, you don't have to connect them. Having them up there. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Can't help you with getting them on the internet. You're going to have to check with Swan, but at least it looks like you can add a hard drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
It's Mylar party balloons. Oh, no.
Speaking of vision, here he is, Scott Wilkinson. He is our home theater geek. That's the name of his podcast, Home Theater Geeks at twit.tv/HTG. Editor-in-chief at the amazing AVS Forum at avsforum.com. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. We talked last week about high dynamic range television.
And, yes, and in the shootout.
In the shootout. Would you define HDR? What is high dynamic range? What does that mean?
Well, high dynamic range refers to more or less the difference between the deepest black and the brightest white that a TV can reproduce.
Okay.
It also has to do with how content was what's called graded or mastered before it is distributed. And up until recently, the dynamic range of television content was very well defined. It was as black as the TV can go. That was never defined, the black level. But the brightness, the high level, the peak white, was defined as 100 candelas per meter squared.
Which now, is I'm a little just confused, because when you talk about audio dynamic range, you talk about the loudest and the quietest.
Yep.
And it's kind of an infinite scale. I mean, you can get louder and louder and louder and louder, quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. And the dynamic range is the difference between the two. But you can't get whiter and whiter and whiter and whiter and blacker and blacker.
But you can get brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter.
So it's brightness.
It's the amount of light coming off the screen.
But what
just
about
like
black?
It's the volume.
Can you get to zero?
You can get to zero. Yes, you can.
Are there TVs that do
OLED TVs get to zero.
Okay. So then when you're talking about dynamic range in an OLED, you're talking really only about how bright its white can be.
That's correct.
Because it's zero to whatever.
To whatever it is. Yeah, exactly.
But we don't measure dynamic range in nits, in brightness.
Yes, we do.
Oh, we do.
Well, we measure brightness in nits. And what I said before was candelas per meter squared, which is a very techie term.
It's another brightness measure.
It's the same as nits. It's absolutely equivalent. It's identical.
Okay.
It's just that nits is a more colloquial term, shall we say. And it's easier to say.
Well, that's a KPMSQ squared.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so nits. Okay. But zero nits is black.
Zero nits is really black.
Where is red in all of this, or blue or green? I mean, they're in the middle somewhere?
Yeah, they are in the middle.
Okay.
Because you have to – basically, you add those three together to get to white.
When we're talking in photography about dynamic range, because it comes up there too, and it really compares to the eye. Because so, for instance, if you look at a scene with your eye, you can only perceive a certain kind of width of dynamic range. You can't see the brightest whites. You know, your eyes will adjust to the brightness, so the darkness you can't see as much of. Is it analogous and to photography?
Yeah, yeah.
These
all interact very, very well. I mean, your eye, the human visual system, can see a certain dynamic range at any given moment. And that dynamic range shifts up and down depending on the amount of ambient light.
Well, or your iris is going, opening or closing.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's how your eye adapts, is by your iris going up and down.
So there's a certain number. Photographers would say stops, which are the F-stops.
Correct. And you can say that here, too.
Okay. You can say that for TV, too.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, of course, there'd be no point in having more or is there, than having wider dynamic range than the human eye, or is there?
No, there really isn't. But the dynamic range of the human eye, even at a given moment, is much wider, much greater than what TVs up to now have been able to reproduce.
Okay. So if I'm watching a sunset, photographers sometimes use sunsets as an example. And the sun is very bright, even though it's going down. And then the beach, comparatively, is dark. And
it's
so
very dark.
In a high dynamic range photograph, it's actually a little weird. It's a little different than a television set. You squeeze it so that you can see both the beach and the sunset. And the way you do that is multiple images exposed differently, and then you merge them together. But what you're getting is not something the human eye could ever see, which is both the sand and the sun at the same time.
Right.
But TV's a little different than that.
It is a little different. We now have cameras that can capture 13, 14, 15 stops
okay.
of dynamic range.
Okay.
And if you capture that and then you create content that has that much dynamic range, well, 14 or 15 stops is more than the human eye can perceive in one
swipe. I guess that's okay, because if I'm looking at a sunset, there's more than that in the sunset.
Absolutely.
And I just look up to see the sun and look down and my pupils adjust and give me kind of an illusion of seeing everything.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And that's not going to happen as much on a TV because you're comprehending. You're seeing the entire TV in one glance, as it were. You're not moving your eye from here to there unless you're really close to the screen.
Is it the same as contrast ratio?
Yes, it's very closely related
okay.
to contrast.
Because I know sometimes yeah. we talk about screens and their contrast ratio, and a bigger
Precisely.
Number is better. That means the difference. I guess that's the difference yeah. in black is blacks and white is whites. Right?
That's right. But yeah. how do you measure contrast ratio? This
I
is
have no
this
idea.
Is one of those specs that you see. Well, I just want to say that to the point of this is one of the specs you see that are kind of like power output for
right.
amplifiers.
Right.
You know, you can test it. You can measure it in many different ways, and manufacturers measure it in such a way that they get the biggest number possible.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily realistic when you're looking at real content.
It's funny because I'm looking online and Wikipedia says the human eye has a contrast ratio of 6.5 stops, and I'm seeing a website that says 20 stops. There's some disagreement over how much.
Well,
the
and
human
here's the
eye
here's
can
the
see.
Difference. The eye can see 15 stops or so total
at
but
any
only
given
five
time.
Or six. At any given time, it's only five or six stops.
Ah.
At any given moment. And then your iris closes down because it's brighter outside.
But it gives you an illusion of seeing the whole scene.
Basically, your instantaneous visual dynamic range shifts up and down.
So we can't really see a very wide contrast ratio. But we'd like a TV that simulates real life, in other words.
Correct. And that's really the point of high dynamic range.
And how high dynamic range can TVs go these days?
Well, they can go pretty high. OLEDs. I mean, depending, you know, you measure a peak brightness on an OLED of these days maybe 500 nits or so.
Wow!
And you go to zero, and you divide 500 by zero. What do you get? Infinity.
Okay.
You can't divide
lot.
By zero
it's
if you remember your math.
It doesn't work. Yeah.
It doesn't really work. So the answer is it's a lot. It's more than you really need.
Okay.
Whereas standard dynamic range, what we used to have
yeah.
5 years ago,
yeah.
Was not enough. So now we have enough.
I heard somebody say the other day, and I think you agree with this, that 4K resolution is not as important as a higher dynamic range.
Absolutely correct. I believe that 100%.
Fortunately, in most TVs these days, you get both, but.
Yes, well, certainly in the higher end ones, and even the yeah. midline ones.
Should
now.
People be looking for HDR televisions?
Yes, absolutely, no question about it.
Okay,
you should.
You'll get that with 4K. Nobody makes an HDR TV that's not 4K. I don't think.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
There are some companies of studios thinking about HDR with 1080p, which is high definition.
For most of us, that'd be fine because
it would be.
You're far
Absolutely.
Enough away, you're not going to see the dots one way or the other. So
that's exactly correct.
I bought a HD and a 4K version of the same movie, the Ghost in the Shell movie we were talking about.
Oh, cool.
And unless I get right up to the screen, I can't see the difference. Right up to the screen, I can on my OLED TV. But
right.
the high dynamic range, that's the big difference.
Yes, 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 yes.
Find out more. Scott's got a whole article on it at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We didn't even get to Dolby Vision versus HDR10, but maybe next week we can...
next week we can do that, yeah.
We can talk about that. Because I wanted to set the base, the ground.
Exactly, and I think you did. That was good. You
want to
sort of understand what high dynamic range is.
What we're talking about here.
Basically, and then we can talk about the different formats or
yeah.
flavors.
Well, I'm going to go get a cup of Joe. I'm going to let you have the audience, if you don't mind, for the next 233 seconds.
To. Thank you so very much. Let's see. Let me make sure I got this. Okay, I got my timer there. I've also got my show timer, which... look at that. That gives me it in minutes and seconds, but that's okay. So anyway, hey, everybody. So glad to see you all. I saw a note in here earlier. Ugh, my mouse just stopped again. I hate when that happens. Scissor Fight said the human eye has about 20 stops or a million to one. That's more or less true when you consider the entire range of the human eye. But at any given moment, the instantaneous dynamic range is smaller than that, and it shifts up and down depending on the amount of ambient light in the room. So that's that. Twisted Mister, OLED and plasma are emissive. That is, they direct view. They do it immediately. They just send out a light and you see it directly without having to go through something, which is what LCD TVs do. I am special. Dolby Vision will do HDR10, but HDR10 won't do Dolby Vision. That's correct. I should say Dolby Vision can do HDR10. Dolby Vision is what's called a dual layer system. So you've got a base layer and an extension layer. And that base layer can be HDR10. Or it can be even be standard dynamic range. And that is more likely what's happening with Dolby Vision content from streaming services. I don't know this for sure. In fact, I need to do some research on it. But I suspect that the streaming services like Netflix, Amazon, Vudu, which have Dolby Vision content, are making the base layer standard dynamic range so that an older TV can see them and interpret them correctly. Now, on the other hand, maybe they are doing HDR10 as the base layer, because any HDR TV, just about any HDR TV out there can do HDR10, and only some of them can do Dolby Vision. Which is why I wanted to point people toward my article on AVS Forum, How to Get Dolby Vision HDR at Home. Because you need a certain kind of TV. You need a certain TV that supports Dolby Vision. You need Dolby Vision encoded content. And I talk about streaming content and Ultra HD Blu-rays, which are now starting to come out with Dolby Vision content. You need, if you're going to put your streamer or your Ultra HD Blu-ray player through an AVR, you need an AVR that can understand and pass it through. That's not trivial, and it's not automatic. It doesn't always happen. So there's a lot of things to think about when you're talking about HDR and getting it at home. Robert Bigelow, good to see you. Hey, Mike One. Web 97... 11, can you recommend a free MPEG-4 file trimmer? No, I don't know much about that, I'm sorry to say. I am special is talking about LG having RGBW pixels. That's a little tricky. LG OLEDs have RGBW pixels. Each pixel has four subpixels.
Can you stick around for the top of the hour?
Happy to.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Sorry, I wasn't looking at the clock.
You had too many clocks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Dave on the line from Orange County, California. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, you mentioned, I think at the top of the hour, about kids being on their...
the iGen, yeah.
Well, I never heard about the iGen. I thought it was more towards on game systems and spending way too much time on it.
Yeah, well, I think that's related, although she says the real issue is with new generation that really doesn't even sit down at a computer or a laptop, but is all on the phone, which I think is very interesting. That's new, obviously.
Yeah. It is, and then also they're also sitting on the game systems like way too long.
But yeah, my kids do that for sure.
I've got three in the military, and it's the way they actually all stay in contact. But I've got a 17-year-old who's over the house, and he doesn't want to get up, do anything.
Yes,
it's a struggle.
Yes. So, what is your solution? Have you figured out a solution?
During the summertime, I've given him a shovel and a wheelbarrow and told him it's time to turn it off and, you know, come do construction with me. And it started to bring him around.
Did it? So he, I'm sure, went kicking and screaming at first, right? Because I think it's almost an addiction. It really feels like something that they go through withdrawal.
Totally.
So you just kind of kept at it, and eventually he felt better.
Yeah, I'm still going at it because his brothers are and sister are around the world, and they're up during the middle of the night, and instead of being awake during the day, he then wants to sleep during the day.
Right, so he can be with them. You know, it's interesting because it's also prepared them for life in the military, because increasingly military jobs involve sitting at a screen and using a computer in a command and control center or running drones or that kind of thing. So there's some evidence that – in fact, I think the Army made a first-person shooter game some time ago as a training vehicle. Nevertheless, I think you're smart to get your kid out there and doing something with his hands.
Oh, exactly. He sits in the truck. I bought a power washer also. He and his other brother come out and help me out. So it's just a way of just getting them outside, getting them into doing a job, and
you.
They're also getting paid well.
Oh, they get make a little money. That's good. Give them a little incentive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Get them out of the chair.
Well, I appreciate your thought, David. I think you're exactly right. I think getting them up off the phone, off the screen. You know, it's screen time, isn't it? That really starts to add up. Yeah, that's what we call it. Whether they're gaming or on the tablet or on the phone, all of it is time spent staring into a screen instead of looking at life. Sometimes I wonder, though, if that's just a prejudice of our generation. You know, maybe their generation, this is just, you know, this is how it's going to be. I don't know.
Yeah, but they still need to learn work ethics.
I agree. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Dave. Thank you.
Take care, sir.
Take care. The article that I was quoting, which was excerpted from a book that's called iGen, is going to be out. The book's going to be out in a week or two. Actually, if I read you the full title, it might give you an idea of the book's point of view. It comes out August 22nd. iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood, and What That Means for the Rest of Us. But it was quickly pointed out to me on Twitter, of course, on Twitter, that people have said this every generation. And I think there is something to be said for every generation has its own kind of way of interacting and being. But it is a cause for concern if they're more depressed, if they don't have life skills, if they don't have social skills. Then I wonder, you know, is it going to be like WALL-E? Remember in WALL-E, the Disney animated Disney movie, where the humans spent time in floating chairs drinking Slurpees on their video visors. And that was pretty much all they did. Renee Marina Del Rey. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. Do you have teenagers?
I have a one and only son who's a teenager. He actually, as a matter of fact, this August on the 22nd, he's going to be 16.
Happy birthday.
And, you know, he's a Leo Zodiac. He's a social boy. He's a great, good kid in school. But, yes, you are spot on about the iGen and the phones itself creating laziness in the kids. What I see from my son, he wants sociability quite often with friends, and he cannot motivate anybody to come outside. What's happening is...
So it's not him, it's his friends who are slaves to their phones.
It's a little of both, because I do agree with you that it creates a little bit of isolation, loneliness, and it's demotivating.
Right.
So what happens is when you can't create your social scene, you have nothing else to do than typically stay in the house and mope about it.
Right.
You know, I ride horses. I have since I was a kid. I'm a falconer, and I'm out there doing stuff, and I wanted my son to participate. And, you know, like you said, when you want to ask them to go somewhere, no, I'm good. Nah, I'm okay. they want to sit in that room and find out who they can get on the phone and network with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what our 14-year-old does. Yeah. And we have to force him off, you know. But it's the problem is it's tough as a parent because then you have this grumpy kid hanging out with you.
And you don't want to deter them from spending quality time with you, even as a parent. You want to kind of encourage it, so you don't want to put them in a even more of an isolation mode.
Right. So what do you do? What's your solution?
Well, first of all, I got good communication with my son. He does kind of tell me things that are bothering him, so I always try to keep that open book.
Yeah,
and not really
nice.
I've knock on wood, I don't know if it's for other parents how they run their story with their children, but he's never been grounded. I'll tell you why. He hasn't done anything outside the box to warrant grounding, but I feel a lot of parents talk at the kids instead of with them.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't want to recommend the be the best friend and the buddy, because that doesn't work either. I think there has to be discipline somewhere along the line. But I'm definitely all about respect, and I will talk to him about high school issues and things that come up. So I feel that I do have a strong bond and connection, communication with him.
Isn't that great?
But on the same level, I am that parent. I'm a different generation. And so he wants to be with kids his own age. Right
sure.
now on the Snapchat, as you know, he goes around and looks, oh, he's at his house. I can see him on Snapchat. He's at the store. I mean, he tracks people about where they're going. Some kids won't text him back. What happens? And then when they do come up to the house, Leo, and they sit in front of our home, I created this nice bench and plants and solar lights so they can hang out. When they do come up, what do? They all sit in a circle and each one's on their phone.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that weird? I've seen that. I've even participated in that. You're at a restaurant. Sometimes you see the whole family looking at their phone.
They're looking at the phone.
So it feels sad to me. It doesn't feel right. I don't want to be too judgmental, but it doesn't feel right.
You're not judgmental. What's happened in the cell phone and the technological generation is, technologically speaking, when you advance with certain things that help the world out, I'm all for it. But what happens, I think it's impeded social skills. I agree with you with children, even adults. People have a sense of empowerment that you have the world at your hands when you got a cell phone in your hand.
And it's very addictive, and I sort of blame the industry because we've made them more addictive. Hey, I really appreciate your input, Renee. Thank you. And we'll keep talking about it. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Yeah, sorry to cut you off there. We just ran out of time, but I think your points are very well taken, Renee. I appreciate it.
Got any questions? We've been talking about a variety of things here. Someone mentioned earlier about how LG TVs have red, green, blue, and white subpixels, which is true. There's actually two different kinds of RGBW organizations. One is like the LG OLEDs, in which every single pixel has a red, a green, a blue, and a white. And the reason they do that is so that their peak white, we were talking about dynamic range earlier and how bright can a TV get. And they do that, LG does that, they put a white subpixel in there so that they can get brighter. Because OLED typically does not get brighter. And even with that white subpixel, it doesn't get brighter than an LCD TV, not by half. So that's why they do that. Now, there are some LG LCD TVs that have RGBW pixel structure, but in that case, the white pixel subpixel is shared by two adjacent pixels. So you actually get a somewhat lower resolution. This is sometimes called a pentile display, and this is typically done in less expensive TVs. And so you get a somewhat lower effective resolution on these TVs. Now, can you see it in real content? That's debatable. But it does lower, technically, the effective resolution. So I don't recommend getting those if you can help it. Again, they're the lower-cost TVs, and I typically look at the higher-cost TVs. Okay. But it's different than the OLEDs, which have RGBW for every single pixel. Now, somebody else in the chat room reminded me of the Sharp, TVs of a few years ago, which had RGB yellow, so RGBY, and each pixel had a red, a green, a blue, and a yellow subpixel. And they claimed that was going to give you better yellows, basically, better, and also colors that have yellow in it, like skin tones. I didn't really think it was necessary, and it didn't really go anywhere. It was called Quatron, if you remember, and George Takei was the spokesperson in the TV commercials. Oh my! So that was pretty funny. But people have been working on that for a while, and to try and improve TVs. by giving them other subpixels besides red, green, and blue. The LG OLED makes some sense because the white subpixel does increase the brightness. However, the one disadvantage it has is that as the colors get brighter and brighter and brighter, they start to converge on white. So the very bright image will not have as saturated a red, green, or blue, or nearly as saturated color. And so that's the disadvantage of having the white subpixel. But the advantage is that it can make a higher peak brightness, and which, you know, is good for specsmanship, right? Anyway, that's my rant on that. Hey, Loquacious, it's always good to see you. Mick, yes, Pentile with a T, correct. That's what that RGBW, where the white is shared between two different adjacent pixels. Lumpy watched Billy Lynn's long halftime walk on Encore. The colors are much brighter than any other movie I have watched. That's interesting. It was on Encore, which means it was broadcast. If it was broadcast TV, then it was still standard dynamic range. But if that's true, then what you have come across is an example of how if you capture and master the movie in more detail with wider colors, higher dynamic range than you're going to end up with, which in the case of broadcast TV, you're going to end up with standard dynamic range, then as you bring it down into the space where it will be when you broadcast it, you're going to have a better result than if you shot it at standard dynamic range, high definition, 1080p to begin with. Always capturing more than you need is a good thing, because then you can reduce it and get a better result than if you shot it there in the first place. Legend is asking, what do you think about getting an Xbox One S or PlayStation 4 for 4K movies as opposed to a standalone player? They're updated far more frequently. You know, that's a good point. The Xbox One S and now the Xbox One X, which I guess isn't out yet, maybe before the end of the year, or September, I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
Is it September?
Yeah. I think, it's before the end of the year for sure.
Before the end of the year. Yeah. They have already a UHD Blu-ray player in them. The PlayStation 4 does not, as I recall.
No, it
Leo, is that right?
That's right.
It doesn't. So
nope.
I would get the Xbox One in that case. Now, whether the Xbox One S or X do Dolby Vision HDR, I don't think they do.
No, I think it's just HDR 10.
HDR 10. Yeah. So that's what I had planned on talking about
today.
But
is Canopy software upgraded? Or is that
If it has a strong enough processor, it can.
Okay. Which it probably does, because frankly,
it probably does.
Gaming processors probably much more than a DVD would normally
exactly,
have.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Sony TVs that have the Sony X1 Extreme processor can be upgraded and will be upgraded to do Dolby Vision. But the older Sony TVs won't, because their processor isn't powerful enough. I would imagine the gaming processors probably would. How much time left? iPhone 02218. Thoughts on Dunkirk in 70mm IMAX? I thought it was really impressive. I do recommend seeing it in 70mm IMAX, even though it's not high dynamic range. Blacks are very high. But the screen, the picture, most of it is 1.43:1 aspect ratio. So it's much taller, much bigger, much more immersive. It's how Christopher Nolan intended that movie to be. So I do recommend it. Mike Heiss says November for Xbox One X. Advantage is 4K rendering, not just upscale. Oh, that's another good point. Very good. And HDR 10 only for now. Very good.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, tech, although I have to say I touched a nerve. And we've been talking a lot about the negative effects, I guess, of tech on the current teenagers of today. If you want to talk about that or anything going on with your systems, 8888 Ask Leo. Tech could mean anything with a chip in it, computers, smartphones, smartwatches. I had quoted last hour an article that was in The Atlantic this month. It's an excerpt from a book that's coming out later this month called iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood and What It Means for the Rest of Us. That is kind of a link-baity article, an article designed, of course, to sell books. And its author, Gene M. Twenge, Ph.D., who is a researcher and a professor, actually has a website called iGen Consulting, where she consults businesses on how to reach the iGen. There are definitely generational differences, and she says this. This is actually her field of study, is the generational differences. And she says it's never all negative or all positive. Like most things in life, there's good and bad. She's merely observing that this generation that grew up with the iPhone, the iPhone particularly, but smartphones in general, but the iPhone particularly, has grown up a little different socially. And at least two of the parents we've talked to so far on the show agree. And we've been talking around the studio, and we all of us who have kids who came of age since 2007 in the iPhone era, that's when the iPhone came out, all of us with kids, you know, so that'd be what, you know, from maybe 18 and under, it would have been 8 years old. Yeah, about right. Maybe a little older. My son's 22, and I think he's kind of edging into the iGen, but not so badly. Henry's an interesting story. He's very sociable, always had friends around, always had kids, and was never, you know, we had, of course, I'm the tech guy, lots of gadgets and gizmos. He had a phone at an early age. He always had game machines, but he never got super addicted. He uses Snapchat a lot with his friends. They don't spend much time on Facebook, but he's still very physically social. He'll go out and do things and hang out with his friends. But now we also have a 14-year-old who's a little different. You know, he grew up and spends most of his time in front of screens, whether it's video games or phones. And I think that that's a some of it's generational, but some of it's also just temperamental. Different kids, different, you know, ways of being. And that's the other thing that's really important to point out with this. And I'm sure Dr. Twenge agrees that every kid's different, unique. She's talking about a trend that's observable as opposed to a universal truth about everybody of this in this age group. But I, you know, I've talked to enough parents that I think it is kind of an issue. And everybody's a little worried. And one thing I would say is parents have always worried about their kids. I grew up in an era where my parents, actually my parents didn't do this, but many parents of friends of mine was, turn off that music. It's too loud. What is this rock and roll? That's not music. I remember one parent saying, I can't understand the lyrics. Now, Nat King Cole, there's a singer. You can understand every word he's singing. So we, you know, every generation has grown up, of course. That's part of the deal, right? Rebelling against the ways of their elders and doing their own thing. That's part of the deal. And so, and part of the deal as parents is this fear that, I don't know, is it, how's this going to work out? And trying to make kids more like us, like we grew up. So I'm not going to say that that's what needs to happen. I don't know what needs to happen. I think it's more of an observation, but it is interesting, isn't it? And as tech people, and maybe you're one of those tech people, you know, we live that way, right? I spend a lot of time on the phone, on the screen, almost all my time doing that. And most of the adults that I work with and the tech enthusiasts I know do the same. But we didn't grow up that way, right? We grew up differently. So is that going to make a difference? I don't know. And it really is the case where you go to a restaurant and you see, you know, or any event. And most of the people at any group gathering are looking at their phones most of the time. It's tempting to say, oh, that's your you kids, you're ruining your life. I don't want to say that. I don't know if that's the case. Anyway, we can talk about that. Or we can talk about why your screen's not working or why your phone's misbehaving or what phone to get. I don't mind. I'm not, no judgment. Lee in Rapid City, South Dakota is next. Hi, Lee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you doing?
I'm well, Lee. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay, but I'm not a tech savvy person, and I have this escort radar detector that they used to make. I think they brought it out in about 2009, and it was really nice because it had a map program with it. And that's when the cars didn't have the in-dash navigation.
Right.
So I thought it would be really nice to have a radar detector and a GPS. So now they don't make it anymore. And I tried to contact Escort, and they don't know anything about how I can update this GPS.
So the Escort still makes radar detectors, right?
Correct. But they just don't make
the GPS. Yeah, and you know, most of the companies that make GPSs have gotten out of that business because everybody's got one in their pocket, let alone their car.
Right.
And so there isn't much of a market for these anymore. So doesn't surprise me Escort said, well, we better just, you know, kill that product line and just focus on the radar detectors. To date, no iPhone will detect radar. So that's a good thing for Escort. At least they've got a business. I do not know. I presume what you're saying is, well, who makes one, right?
Yeah, the radar detector has a USB port and it has an SD card port. And when they...
Oh, you want to update the maps, you're saying?
Yeah, I just want to update the map.
Yeah. This is, by the way, why people don't buy standalone GPS anymore, and the GPS in your car is of dubious value because your phone's always getting updated, right? Google Maps, Apple Maps, Waze, Correct. They're always up to date. And the car has
a Windows embedded CE 6.0.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, it's an old thing, and it's a, I don't even know how to pronounce this. It's an SIRF*3 system.
Yes. Okay. That's the kind of GPS chip that's in there.
Right.
So is it a Passport? Which one do you have?
It's called a Passport IQ.
Oh, you do have the IQ. Okay. So there are software updates, but I don't know if that includes the map. That's an interesting. I'm looking at the support forums. There's a very good support forum for Escort radar detectors. It's called escortradarforum.com. I don't know if it's run by Escort or not. In some ways, you'd like that if it weren't run by Escort, because then, you know, you sometimes the company run forums are less good. I don't see any information about updating the maps. You know what's interesting is Escort now makes an iPhone app and an Android app. It doesn't obviously have a radar detector in it, but it's got a crowdsourced radar detector, right? So you get radar alerts for even radar devices like laser radar that their old Escorts couldn't detect. You get them on the phone now, which I think is kind of funny. I guess it's dependent on people spotting it some other way. That's really interesting. How do you update it? Well, all I can say is I don't know, but I would check the forum. And escortradarforum.com. They haven't made this since 2010. So it seems not surprising that Escort themselves say, well, and we don't have any maps for it. I don't know if the company doesn't make them, could somebody else do it? I see firmware updates. This is from 6 years ago, this post. Yeah, I'm wondering. I think you may have an obsolete device, and yeah, sad to say these things happen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So there are, thanks to OO in the chat room, there are companies making, like Whistler makes one that has built-in GPS. So there are companies making them still. Whistler is Escort's prime competitor, I think. But this doesn't look like it has a screen. It just has an internal GPS to let you know about alerts. So this isn't probably what you're talking about. Yeah, I'm not surprised they don't make these anymore, right? Yeah, it's not so much I don't know. I think if you have a 7-year-old product and they don't, you know, they're not going to make maps for it forever. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I'll tell you, one thing that's changing with the times, that's been slow to change with the times, is the mortgage approval process. When we bought a house, it wasn't that long ago. It'll be 4 years in October. So 4 years ago, we went to the big bank, you know, the one with the stagecoach and the horses, and it was a nightmare. It took months to get a loan approved, and it wasn't that we didn't have good credit. It's just we went to them. They kept coming back and saying, "Well, we need more. You got any other document? Want more documentation?" We almost lost the house. The seller was getting impatient. We went on vacation, and we were still faxing stuff from the cruise. I've told this story before. I could tell you what next time what we're going to do, or if we're going to refi, we're going to Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage for your next home loan or your next refi. It's from Quicken Loans, which is, of course, a great mortgage lender and number one in customer satisfaction 7 or 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power. So a great lender, number one in mortgage servicing, too, by the way. Not just mortgage approval, but mortgage servicing. But even better, one that really likes the geeks. They've created a product for us. It's entirely online. No faxing of documents. No rummaging through your attic. They've got trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions, so you just agree to have them send over your bank statements or your pay stubs. They do this so fast because it's all computerized. You can choose the rate and term, of course, but they'll crunch the numbers based on your income, your assets, your credit, and give you a mortgage offer that is tailored for you, and they'll do it not in months, not in weeks, not in minutes, not in days, in minutes. Literally, you could do it at an open house. You could be looking at a house saying, let's buy this. Okay, go online. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Touch a couple of buttons, and you'll get approval in, like, almost instantly. The power of computers. Who'd have thunk it, right? Rocket Mortgage. From Quicken Loans, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Understand fully what you're up to. Apply simply, understand fully, and then mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You may not need it today, but make a note of it. Next time you're out looking at houses, it'd be nice to know. You can just go whip out the phone and go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Make a bookmark in your browser. Make a folder called Home House Hunting. And then right in there, your first link, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. We thank them so much for their support of the show, making it possible to do the Tech Guy podcast. The power of computers compels you, says Keefe. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. See, in my day, kids, turn down that noise. We were rocking. 888-827-5536. I've said it a couple of times, and I didn't tell you where. I said, I'll put it on the website. I'll put it on the website. And I didn't tell you where the website is. It's easy to remember. TechGuyLabs.com. I'm the tech guy. I'm in my laboratory. I got my lab coat on, my protective eyewear, a funny hat. I'm in the labs with my Bunsen burners and beakers. That's the website. TechGuyLabs.com. Actually, that was the cover of one of my books. I think it was Leo Laporte's, what was it, 2003 Computer Almanac? That's how long I stopped writing books after about 2006, I think, because there was no money in it. Who reads books these days? Yeah, the 2003 Technology Almanac has me in the Tech Guy Labs with the Bunsen burner. I remember when we shot that. That was crazy. Yeah, you can still get it on Amazon. That was crazy. $2.29, slightly used. If there's an autograph in it, don't tell me. I don't want to know. 8888-ASK-LEO, my phone number, techguylabs.com, the website. Tallahassee, Florida, your next Jim. Hi, Leo Laporte here. Hi, Jim.
Yes, sir. Hope you're not too disappointed. I actually have a technical question.
No, I'd rather talk about that. This stuff about the kids today, it's too complicated. I don't know what to do.
Well, that's all right, because the only kid I have has four legs, fur, and shed.
And you don't have to worry about screen time.
No, she's too busy to sleep on the cold tile floor. Anyway, I'm having an issue. I'm hoping that you will not be suffering from as advanced a case of cranial rectal inversion as the tech support people I've been trying to deal with for 2 weeks.
Uh-oh. You know, I'm the court of last resort. If you can't get help from tech support, you call me.
Well, I've gone as far. I went and bought the physical media and installed it. Kept getting errors. Even sent them screenshots of the errors.
What are you trying to burn a DVD? Is that what it is?
No, sir. I'm actually trying to install the software.
Oh, you have some software and you can't read the disc.
No, well, I'm getting all kinds of different errors.
What's the program?
Creator NXT 5 Pro.
From Roxio.
Yes. And I've actually sent them the error messages. And they said, oh, yes, well, you need to remove the old program. You need to...
You know what I would do? I would ask them, can you give me a link to download it?
Well, I've actually tried that also.
Ah, because if it's something wrong with your optical drive, then we could eliminate that. So you can't download it and install it either?
No, I keep getting different error messages.
Okay. And so one of the things that does happen, and this happens a lot with Roxio products, is they have drivers and codecs for your software. Because you're going to burn DVDs, you're going to burn CDs. Actually, this is an audio burner, right? CD burner. No, it does DVDs too. So often, I've seen this before, what version of Windows are you using?
Windows 7, 64-bit, up-to-date, current,
etc. It's probably, and I'm surprised their tech support people didn't know this, a conflict with an existing driver or codec on your Windows system. What error messages are you getting?
Well, I was actually getting, and like I said, the back told me the guy. I've been attempting to have someone call me. I said, look, I'm tired of dealing with y'all over email.
Well, just tell me. Yeah, don't worry. I don't care about you, the soap opera with them. But I'm curious what the issue. What happens when you install it? You mentioned it, but I just kind of want to get some more specifics.
Well, I'm trying to find the screen cap, but it actually gives me a four-letter error code.
Okay.
And the error, they said it's a Windows 10. And I keep telling them.
No, it's not Windows 10, it's Windows 7. You're using Windows 7, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know that, and I know that, but apparently the tech support people don't know that.
Yeah, so let's stop talking to them. I think this is one of those things that you can often find help on Google. Google the name of the program. It's enough just to say probably Roxio Creator 5 or Creator NXT 5. And then the error message, and particularly that four-letter code. And I bet you there are other people with a similar situation. I think the direction I would point you is a driver conflict. I've seen it go the other way, by the way. In fact, we had a spate of calls, people who could, they'd install a Roxio product, a burner product of some kind, and then all of a sudden they couldn't hear any sound anymore and things like that. It's unfortunate. It's kind of the nature of this. And the good news is physical media has gone away. And I know you want to burn discs, but in a few years, nobody's even going to know what a disc is. But it's unfortunate that Roxio wants to put its own stuff on there. And I feel like that's almost certainly the issue. But I need the error, the four-digit error code. And frankly, all I would do is what I'm saying you should do, which is Google the name of the product and the error code. And look on, what you're going to look on is support forums, things like that. And you'll find it. You'll find it. I'm almost certain there's something there, some conflict there. There are also other solutions for burning, and if you've ever installed any of them, that might be part of the problem too. If you use there's plenty of free and open programs like ImageBurn that will do the same thing, but it might conflict, that kind of thing. Actually, the chat room's saying just get rid of the Roxio and download ImageBurn. It's funny. This is a kind of a blast from the past. We used to talk about this kind of stuff all the time, and frankly, I think it's gonna go by the wayside. Why pay $100 for this product when you can get something to do it for free? And then, how many computers come with DVD burners in them anymore? Anyway, it's pretty hard to find.
Somebody in the chat room said, I had the same issue a week ago. Fry's Tech said I had to update the runtime drivers and I could install my new software. No idea. No idea what that means.
That sounds like the kind of gobbledygook you'll get from a tech support guy who's been there too long and doesn't really want to deal with it. 8888 Ask Leo. IMGBURN. Tell you what, let's put a link to that in the show notes. Maybe just give up on Roxio, get your money back, and install something for free. 888-827-5536. Maybe you know an answer. That's the advantage of this show, is that you're not only talking to me, you're talking to a million other people who maybe some of them have the same problem who can maybe help you. And, of course, there's a few hundred people in the chat room who are especially good at ferreting out these kinds of solutions. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. More calls right after this. He is Johnny Jet, man. He's been everywhere, man. He joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. JohnnyJet.com. Hello, Mr. Jet.
Hello, Leo. Nice to be back in Los Angeles.
You're home again.
I was away for 3 weeks.
I'm looking at the map behind you. You don't put pins in there for all the places you've been.
I have another map that I do.
Oh,
this
good.
One I don't.
That's kind of be kind of fun. Have you been to Winnemucca, Mac?
No, I have not. But
so that's
I'm
going
to need to go.
But remember, Johnny Cash, not Jet, is on his way to Winnemucca. So he's been everywhere, but maybe he's never been to Winnemucca. He's adding Winnemucca to his list. So
I need to too.
Yeah, you need to too.
I went to your home state last week.
My home state of Providence, Rhode Island.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I was in New York City, Connecticut, and then I was going to Boston, and I drove through Rhode Island to Watch Hill, Rhode Island, not Providence, to see where we used to vacation.
I was watching your Instagram. So you used to go to this resort. Looked beautiful. Old house, old giant Victorian building.
The Ocean House. A great story. It used to be, it was 100 years old. They were going to knock it down, build condos. It was a fire trap. My mom hated staying there because of that. But anyway, some big New York City developer went in and tore it down and rebuilt
now.
It.
It's fancy
rebuilt it
now.
Exactly like it used to be.
Oh,
almost exactly.
Look at that. But now it's fancy. You know what it reminds me of is the Hotel Del Coronado in beautiful San Diego. Oh, Johnny, I've lost your audio. Are you talking to me? I see your lips moving. I don't hear you. Yeah, nope. Dead as a doornail, Johnny. Did you push a button? Did you unplug something? It's one of only 11 Forbes triple five-star hotels in the world. I don't know what to do. No, I know. Of course, Johnny's turned on, but his volume went away. Why don't you give us a ring, Johnny? Yeah, he's on the phone now. So Kim, look for Johnny on the phone. We're going to have to revert. We were using fancy digital technology. Now we got him. Hi, Johnny. Sorry about that.
I have no idea what I did.
Now he's on the phone. See how scratchy it sounds? It's old-fashioned technology. But we can still see him. But, of course, it's radio, so who cares? This looks like a nice place. Did you stay at the Ocean House?
No, it's $1,000 a night.
What?
I did not stay there. I did a Marriott trip. I stayed at the JW in New York, then I stayed at the Courtyard in Norwalk, Connecticut, and then the Renaissance in Boston.
We're going to make a new Johnny Cash song for you. He stayed at every Marriott. It'd be a good song.
Full disclosure, it was a Marriott trip, but we stopped here for lobster rolls. I actually had 3 lobster rolls in 3 days. It was amazing.
You never can have too many lobster rolls.
In 3 different states, too, by the way.
Wow. Which state has the best lobster rolls?
You know, Massachusetts. I didn't make it to Maine this trip, but Massachusetts, Boston, this place called Row 34 was really good.
Ooh, I love the seafood. I always go to Legal whenever I get in town.
Good.
Legal seafood. So, Johnny joins us not to talk about lobster.
That's right.
But he joins us to talk about an app and a website that'll help us travel better. Give us something good here.
So if you want to travel like a movie star, if you ever go into the airport and see some, like pretty big movie stars, not the big top ones, and you see how they just get whisked through security when they land.
I hate that.
Someone's waiting for them at the airport, and they just walk them right through immigration.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some big-time celebrities do that. Well, now there's a service that actually lets you do it as well. And it's not that crazy expensive. So it's called Solve, S-O-L-V-E.com. And they're in 500 airports, and they work with, you know, locals who have, you know, they know the airport, they have security clearances, and they'll greet you at the airport. Depending, let's say if you land in from a flight, they'll greet you right by the plane door. They'll walk you, whisk you through the immigration customs. And, you know, if you're making another connection, they'll put you on the next plane or they'll bring you to the lounge. And
do they tell the customs people, oh, Leo's a celebrity, just let him through? I mean, how do the customs people feel about this?
Well, they must pay a price. So they're just probably charging you double. So I just did, you know, all the different airports are different. So Bangkok is like $90 per person, which is a good deal.
It's not awful. If you get through it real quick and easy, it almost is worth it.
No, for sure. Especially, you know, we travel a lot, so we probably wouldn't do it. But if you want to have, you know,
a nice special, like your honeymoon or, yeah, special vacation.
Well, yeah, if you don't want to wait in these long lines or confusing airports like Charles de Gaulle in Paris, you know, it costs.
Heathrow. I would buy this in Heathrow because Heathrow is a nightmare.
$290 per passenger. If you have two, it's $145. It's basically around $290 regardless. For European airports, but again, Asia, much cheaper. And, you know, for people who are worried about traveling, especially, you know, making a connection in countries they think that are sketchy, this is a great way. You won't get lost.
I am going to do this. I love this. Yeah, I don't.
I thought you would love this.
Yeah.
I have not tried it, but.
I like to pretend I'm a celebrity.
Well, sometimes when I do trips, they do have these kind of escorts. And I've always wondered where they got them from because it's amazing. You know, you get off the plane and they're right there for you. I think the last time I did it was in Nairobi, Kenya, with my wife. We did a Mikado safari tour. And right there, you were literally walking off the plane and they're like, there's a sign with your name.
Oh, I love that. I actually will pay a little extra to, like, for Southwest, I'll pay a little extra so as to get ahead in the line. And not in different airports, sometimes you can go to a special security line. It's a little faster. I think that's worth it. Time is money.
It is. I mean, again, you know, these guys are going usually after, you know, big time business guys or high profile. But it's a great service for people who just need a little bit of hold handing and are willing to spend, you know, a little bit of money.
It's a little pricey. I'm looking at our flight sometime in the future. $375 for departure service for two, and then when we arrive at Heathrow, $225 for arrival service. So that would add up. But we're now talking $600 for two people.
No, I wouldn't use it for departure.
I don't think I'd
use
it
more for arrival or transferring.
Yeah, yeah. I do like that though. When we're on a tour, you know, and the tour company provides somebody who meets you at the gate and gets you out of the airport. I like that.
For
I
sure.
like that, yeah. Especially if you're in a complicated airport like Cairo. I remember going to Cairo. It was crazy. And I was so glad somebody who spoke Arabic met us and kind of got us through the formalities.
Yeah.
So that's Solve. Solve.com.
In the U.S., just get TSA PreCheck or Global Entry Clear or any of those. So I got an app for you, too. We got time?
Yeah.
CrimeandPlace.com is the website. It's an iOS-only app, so the website just tells you some information.
I love the name.
I got a reader tip telling me about it.
It's a crime compass. They call it a crime compass.
Yes, so, you know, there's a heat map. Also, you can just bust out the compass, and it will tell you which way to walk that's safer, and they're using data from the FBI, census. Wow. So,
that's interesting. So you're walking, you're looking at your phone, and it'll say, don't go there.
Yeah. I mean, and there's some cities, you know, like especially like New Orleans. You just go a few blocks, and you're in a pretty sketchy part of town.
Yeah.
Or Chicago.
Right.
You know, the
South Side. Cities are like that. Yeah. That's where bad Leroy Brown was, South Side of Chicago. He's the meanest man in the whole damn town. So, all right. This looks like it's very useful. iPhone only. It is expensive, $8. Crime and Place, U.S. Crime Map and Compass, and it's based on FBI and local police data. That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, you can weight category. Like if you can say, you know, if murder is high in that area, let's not go there. You can weight it. So I consider murder, you know, high priority. I want to avoid getting murdered. I think that's a good idea.
Number one.
Number one. Johnny Jett. You'll find him at johnnyjett.com in an article on how to travel like a movie star. It's right there. You can also get his free newsletter. Absolutely. You must subscribe to that. That's really where the travel deal newsletter is well worth it. Plus lots of other stuff. And follow him on Twitter at Johnny Jett. There's always good material there. In fact, your Twitter feed is rich with good stuff all the time. Thank you for doing that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Huh, I wonder what happened there. I try to avoid neighborhoods where I want to commit suicide. I wonder if that's on there. No, it's not. I don't know what happened with your sound. I don't know.
You know what? I don't know if I pulled a cord.
Something got unplugged. Is Jack under your desk?
Can you hear me now on that one?
Talking. No, I only hear you on the phone.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Talking to the mic. Hit the mic. Just hit it. Hit it hard. No, it's just the phone. Just the phone. Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to go. I have no idea what happened.
No, it's fine. Phone works fine, too. We're used to that.
I'm glad I always put you on redial, so I hit redial.
Smart man. Thank you.
Yeah, you got to get prepared.
Thanks, Johnny. Have a great one.
Thanks. Right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Ask Leo. The number. Eric Hutchison, Kansas is next. Hi, Eric.
Hold on, Leo. Let me get you on speakerphone.
Come on over. I'm sorry to keep you on hold so long. Thank you for your patience. I appreciate it. Now I can hear you well. What's up? Oh, no. Did he hang up by accident? He's still there. Eric. I guess we lost him. Let's move on to poor guy who was on hold for so long and then something went wrong. Bob in Walnut Creek. Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. I'm a big fan. Believe it or not, I've listened to all 1,409 of your tech guy shows.
No, you haven't. No, you have not.
That's even since when I go away out of town for a while, I download them when I get back and then I have to speed through them. But anyway, I consider myself a pretty good amateur computer sleuth, but this one has got me sort of confused and don't know where to turn. I was getting, I had Windows 7 upgraded to Windows 10 machine, i5. I was getting low memory messages on my browsers, both Chrome and Firefox, saying close the program, and then if I didn't do something, it would just shut it down.
What? Now, how much, I wonder if it's memory or storage, how much storage do you have left on the hard drive?
Oh, there's tons on the hard
drive. Tons, okay.
Hundreds of gigabytes.
All right. Then maybe it is memory. I mean, memory is typically RAM.
Right.
So how much RAM is in that system?
I got more RAM. Now I got 8 gigs of RAM. And it didn't really make much difference. I've looked at Task Manager, and when I get the message, I'm at 47%. Maybe I only have maybe 5 tabs open and not other programs running. I've run the memory test Microsoft offers.
The problem here is that when a program tells you what's wrong, it's almost always wrong. It rarely knows. I have a real issue with error messages. Developers continue to put them in. They're usually worthless for two reasons. One, it gives you information that only the man who wrote or woman who wrote the program would even be able to make heads or tail of. Well, you have a problem in subroutine X349, memory location F3944. Like, that's something you could do something about. No. They're left over from when the person was writing the software. And then the other problem I have with error messages is they often have nothing to do with the actual error. By the time the program thinks it's got a problem, it's too late. So I wouldn't trust the error message particularly. Obviously, something's gone wrong because it's interesting that both Chrome and Firefox are doing this.
The only things. I mean, I've run other programs.
No, you have plenty
here
of memory. I know it's not the memory. It's more like one of the things that all software does is they reserve a segment of memory for their own personal use, sometimes as a stack, sometimes as just a chunk of memory. And if that overflows, and my guess is that's actually a stack problem. If that overflows, that's bad news. It's not that you've run out of memory. The program has not allocated enough or something like that. In any event, it doesn't make any difference. The first thing I would do is reset the browsers. Both Chrome and Firefox let you clear out the browser and start over as if it's new.
And the reason I say this is because I'm going to guess, it's weird that it's happening in both browsers, but that seems to me to be a clue. I'm going to guess there's a site you visit, and you visit it in both browsers, that has something like a malformed JPEG. Some sort, you know, if you write JPEG, an image has a header in it that says how big this image is. And if the header's messed up, it could say this is an 18 petabyte image, and the browser will try to reserve that much space and it'll crash. Something like that. And that would be stored in your cache, you know, because you visited that site in both the browsers, and it said, oh, we got to remember this giant image for next time. And every time you run the browser, you're getting this error again.
So now I've cleared the cache, but that didn't. So this is something more resetting.
Resetting. You know, there's a actual reset command in Firefox. I'm not sure how to do it in Chrome.
Well, I can search that.
Yeah, just. But what you want to do is restart. You know, start from fresh. Now, a warning, that's going to delete any passwords you've saved in the browser, any cookies you've saved in the browser.
Yeah, I know. I've done that before.
Yeah, you're going to, it's as if you never had it before. But
is there any analysis, an analyzing program out there that will tell me where that problem lies? I tried SysInternals, auto runs.
Yeah, it's not really that. The Process Explorer is the one from SysInternals that might tell you something. It's kind of like what you've already used. You use Task Manager to see how much memory is being used. It's Task Manager on steroids.
Okay.
It might be more useful, but I don't think that's really – unless you – this is why error messages are overrated. Unless you wrote the software, you wouldn't really know where to look. You know, if you wrote the software, you might get a an insight from something like that, but most likely not. We're going to put a link in the show notes to an article at How To Geek, how to reset your web browser to its default settings, and it describes how to do it for all the major browsers, including Chrome and Firefox.
Great. Now, I noticed one other thing when I was looking at Task Manager, and is this normal? Chrome has all these iterations, and it seems like when I cancel each of them, it's the
each
extensions.
Tab. Yeah, no, each tab has, Chrome does that on purpose. It isolates every process. Uh-huh. That's a security device that's good. You want it to do that.
Great.
So I first reset the browsers. If that doesn't fix it, then there may, it doesn't happen in any other program though, right?
Correct.
It may be, are you using Windows 10?
Yes. It was.
How about Edge? If you use the Edge browser, do you ever get that issue?
Well, I've used Edge a couple times, but not enough to...
My theory is you've gone to a site, had some malformed something, got saved in some way that's affecting both browsers. However, and it might not affect Edge because you never went to that site on Edge.
Right.
However, it could also be something wrong with the Windows swap file, or it could be a lot of things. So I think the first thing to do is reset the browsers. If that doesn't work and it continues to happen... then it's not the browser. At that point, it's Windows. Another diagnostic would be to create a new account. In fact, everybody listening, you should have on a Mac or a PC an account you never use, you know, a profile, a user that you never use. It should have administrative privileges. Just let it sit there unused. And it's useful for things like this because if you log into this unused account and you don't have the problem, well, that's further information. It tells you that it's something specific to this profile. So that would be another thing to try.
Great. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome. And it could also be an extension that you've installed in both browsers. You know, if you're using an ad blocker or some sort of extension that's in both browsers, it could be that's poorly written. It could be doing that. That could be doing it to you. That's why another trick that's good to know is starting up a browser in safe mode. I didn't mention that. But you can Google that as well for the browsers that you use. If you start, typically it's something like holding down the shift key when you start the browser. You start up in safe mode, it doesn't load any extensions. If everything's okay, well, that's another little piece of information. Well, I think we got Eric back from Hutchinson, Kansas. I'm so glad I got you back. Sorry about that.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Eric. What can I do for you?
Okay. I have... I had screensaver enabled on an earlier version of Windows 10, but the Creator's Edition 1703 has taken the option out. You can't. I still have...
You want a screensaver, but you've got no screensaver.
Well, you can't... It goes to it when... but, you know, it's still there, but there's no option in the control panel. You search control panel.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's not there.
You're so right. I just pressed the
win. Anybody in the chat room knows a registry hack. I've been in the registry. I'm familiar with it. If they know, somebody in the chat room might know how to
Let me tell you how to where the screensaver settings are on Windows 10. Maybe this will help you. It's not immediately obvious. It's in the lock screen. So here's what you do. You open up the settings and you go to lock screen, which is in the, I think it's in personalization. So you hit the personalization button in lock screen. At the very, very bottom, screensaver settings. At the very, very bottom. And the reason that's at the bottom and kind of hidden away is it's going to open the old school control panel and pop that up. You know, this is one of the things I really think Microsoft blew with Windows 8 and Windows 10. There's two different control panels now. There's the old-fashioned control panel, and then there's the dumb, simple control panel, and that's the one that launches. But if you go to personalization, lock screen, and you hit at the very bottom, screensaver settings, you will finally get to the old-school control panel, which you can now fix. That's with the new Creators Update. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Isn't that weird? What is wrong with you, Microsoft? Oh, Lord above. Let's close this out. So we'll go back. We'll go do it all again. So you're going to go to personalization, right? Used to have the screensaver here. Has background colors, lock screen themes, start taskbar. Where's the screensaver? Well, weirdly, if you go to lock screen, that's not the first place I'd look for it. And then at the very bottom, screensaver settings. And this is what you get now. You get the old school control panel where you can choose the screensavers and you can say how long it lasts and all that stuff. Does this mean Microsoft doesn't want screensavers anymore? I just don't understand. And if you search for screensaver... or screensaver settings, you don't get anything. You get web results, which, you know, if you followed it, maybe would give you a place to find this. That is just weird that Microsoft did that. Yeah, or once you're in settings, you could type screensaver to search for it. Yeah, but the most direct route, oddly enough, Windows key lock screen at the bottom, it says screensavers. That's why, as soon as I got that Lenovo T470S, very nice system, I immediately wiped it and put Linux on it. Actually, I put FreeBSD on it first. I put TrueOS on it just to see, and it was 100% compatible. Everything worked out of the box, which stunned me because this is a brand new with a Kaby Lake processor, and it worked fine under TrueOS, which is, of course, the installer for FreeBSD. Pretty nice. And then... the problem I have with FreeBSD, I want to like it, I want to use it, but it's just not desktop ready, I don't think. It's clunky as heck. Control run, type control space desk.cpl, comma, screensaver, comma, add screensaver. That's easier, guy. That's the way to do it. Windows. Is there anything it can't do? Is there anything it can do? Our show today brought to you by WordPress. I love WordPress. Can I just say, I had an affair with another blogging platform, but I'm back, baby. And WordPress welcomed me with open arms. Since 2005 or 2006, I've been blogging on WordPress. I had my own server.
downloaded the software, ran it, became intimately familiar with the ins and outs of WordPress. But one of the things I found was I was spending a lot of time tweaking WordPress, messing with WordPress, updating WordPress, and less time blogging. Now, that's fine. But then I went to WordPress.com. And the thing is, they're hosting it. They keep the software up to date. And now I find I blog more. I love WordPress.com. You know, WordPress powers 28% of the internet. But what's cool about WordPress.com is it's a community. When you're on WordPress.com, you're there with millions of other people using WordPress. They promote your site. I have 500,000 people following me at WordPress.com. I don't spend any more time messing with the WordPress software. I spend all my time blogging. So whether you want to start a blog or build a website for your business or both, it's easy. Go to WordPress.com. Just click the button. Start it up. It could not be easier. I would suggest starting with a basic template, and then as you use it and start creating content. By the way, because WordPress is a dominant platform, there's so many programs and tools, third-party tools too, for it, that it's easy to export your blog from some other site, import it into WordPress. Couldn't be easier. Everybody supports the WordPress format. So all your content's in there. And then you can mess with the templates. You want to see my blog? I actually wasn't sure what template to use. So I asked the folks at WordPress for some support. I told them what I wanted. They said, oh, you should use 2017. So this is the 2017 template. But it's easy to change anytime I want. It's a wonderful tool for blogging, for posting images, for posting links, for selling. You get built-in search engine optimization. You get social sharing. Every page on here encourages people to share it with others on the internet using Facebook or Twitter. See, share this. This was all built in. I didn't do any of this. Twitter, Facebook, Google. Like this. By the way, liking it's awesome. See, these are five other WordPress.com sites that like it. I can add a like button. It's already there for me. You can get comments. You can leave a reply. They handle it. You see, it's imported, by the way, my Twitter, my Instagram. All this is so easy. And it's a great community. Great support both from the community and from the pros at WordPress. Their business plan lets you access. I have the business plan. I really like it. Hundreds of plugins and themes. And, you know, I've got all the plugins I want, which is great for me because I have my AMP plugin. It's HTTPS. I can't remember all the plugins I'm using. It's really great. See why 28% of all the websites run on WordPress, the world's most popular and powerful site building platform. And they do great hosting, too. Get started today. 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to WordPress.com/techguy to create your site. WordPress.com/techguy. Some of the biggest publications in the world run on WordPress. And some of the littlest sites, like mine. WordPress.com/techguy. Thank them so much for their support. Not only of my blog, I love being back on WordPress, but also of the Tech Guy podcast. WordPress.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and what the hell's wrong with kids today? 88, we were talking about that earlier. 88, and what's right? And what's right about them? Yeah, there's a lot of good too. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. When I answer a question, we talk about a product or an article. We put it all in the show notes. That's free. It's our website, techguylabs.com. You don't have to sign up. It's just wide open, 24/7. It's there all week long. We also put audio and video from previous shows there, so you can go back in time and listen. techguylabs.com. It was really interesting. I was just going back through, just to make sure that I wasn't crazy, through the new control panel settings for your screensaver on Windows 10. This is the update they put out, the creator's update. They put it out in March. And yeah, they've hidden screensavers. Is it, you know, they have metrics. They know how much people use stuff. They call it telemetry. On almost all versions of Windows,
You can turn it off, I guess, but most people just leave it on. So they have a pretty good idea of how widely used features of Windows are and even applications. And obviously, they've realized nobody uses screensavers, so they've buried the setting. I mean, really buried it. Somebody said, try it with Cortana. Let's see. I'll try. Open screensaver settings. And no, it gave me a Bing search. But the good news is the Bing search goes to an article that does tell you how to set it. The way you set it now is you go to the lock screen control panel at the very bottom, screensaver settings. I have to think Microsoft just decided, yeah, screensavers. Nobody wants them. Nobody needs them. That's just crazy. So I understand why Apple and Microsoft are, you know, always messing with features. It's one thing to add features. You want to be careful adding features because you don't want it to get overblown and crazy and bloated and too complicated. But at the same time, there's a real penalty when you take features out. No matter what feature you put in a program or an operating system, somebody's using it. And somebody's going to be inconvenienced and irritated when you take it out. So you have to be very judicious. And what Microsoft tends to do is what they've done here, which is instead of taking it out, they just kind of start to hide it. They stick it somewhere no one sees it, and then figure, well, if you really care, you'll figure it out. That's all I can think, because you want to keep it clean looking. I have to say, I'm more and more disenchanted with both Windows and Mac OS. These are old operating systems. They're showing their age. They've been refreshed a little bit, but they're clunky and they're old and they're funky. And I know you have your preference because you know how to use it. You've learned. But, I mean, what if you learned how to play the piano and then every 3 years they added 5 new keys and 2 buttons? After a while, it would start to look like, I don't know, an organ, a pipe organ or something. It'd get crazy looking. It's like that. Rhonda says, screensavers are hard to find. Big deal. Move on, Leo. All right, Rhonda. All right. Hank in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Hank.
Hi, Leo. I've got a AV set up with the equipment in a closet behind my TV in my living room. So I use a RF remote, and I've been using the Universal Remote Model MX450. Mm-hmm. And it works okay, but it seems to be dying and not working properly on the DirecTV. So I was looking for an alternative, something besides the Universal. It's expensive, and I got to get an AV guy to come program the macros and all that. So I'm looking for something that's simpler but still nice and kind of high-end.
Your challenge here, of course, is that you don't have line of sight to the controls.
Right.
And so that's very typical of a fancy home theater installation. They want to hide, you know, all the ugly gear and the lights and everything so you can just look at the screen. So you have a remote control that uses radio instead of infrared. Most inexpensive remote controls use infrared, and they're invisible to the eye, but they have to be in line of sight of the equipment, of the gear. And I'm sure you can use infrared with your TV, but it's all the other stuff. One thing I might recommend, and it's certainly worth a look, and it's not expensive, unlike your Universal remote. It's $99. It comes from Logitech. Remember, Logitech made some very nice Universal remotes, widely used in home theater installations like the Harmony. They have a new thing called the Harmony Hub that's an interesting way of working. So you'd put the Harmony Hub in the closet with everything else. It uses infrared to control everything else, but you control it from your phone or tablet with Bluetooth, which is a RF technology. So you can talk to the hub around corners. You don't have to have line of sight to the hub as long as you're within about 100 feet of it, which I imagine you are.
Yeah.
But you don't – it has to have line of sight to everything else. And the advantage of this is it's, A, inexpensive. It's like I said, it's about $100. Because it's Logitech and it's Harmony, they have been working as a universal remote for more than a decade. So they support every conceivable kind of hardware you could have in your home theater system. The only issue with this would be the television. You might still need a TV remote to turn it on or off. And that, of course, can be line of sight. I'm not sure. They do. They have IR blasters that attach to the Harmony hub. And maybe you could take an IR blaster and kind of put it through the door somewhere.
Well, so the Harmony, the remote doesn't.
The remote is RF. It actually uses Bluetooth. Yeah, it uses Bluetooth. Well, I guess if you got these, they don't sell a remote. That's why this is cheap. They sell the hub, and you use your phone or your tablet. Anything with Bluetooth.
I got it. Okay.
So it controls the idea. Actually, it works with Wi-Fi as well. So that means you don't have to be within 100 feet. It could be anywhere in the house, including out of the house. You can use it to control your stuff via Wi-Fi from off-site.
On the internet, yeah.
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 Anyway, it's inexpensive. It's certainly worth a look. I'm sure there are many other remote RF remotes, you know.
Okay, related. I want to upgrade to the Apple TV 4, but that doesn't have just a plain old RF remote interface the way the 2 and the 3 did. So will that work with what you're suggesting?
It will.
Okay.
It will. It works with everything I had in my cupboard, and I had quite a bit. Including the Apple TV 4. It's such a big blaster that you don't have to have really direct line of sight. I put it on one shelf, and I guess it was just bouncing infrared light off the walls because everything worked. The only issue would be the TV, because the TV isn't proximate to all your other doohickeys.
No. That's fine. I mean, if I had to have just a TV remote just to turn it on and off.
It'd be nice if it controlled the TV, because that's part of what Harmony does is you could program. You could say, I want to watch CSI Los Angeles, and it would know what channel, and it would turn on the TV. It would do all this. It would go every – it would do it all with one fell swoop.
Yeah.
But, and if you can get an IR blaster kind of out of the wire closet somewhere in where it can see the TV, then maybe you could do it that way. Anyway, at $89 – it's actually $89.99 at that price, it's worth experimenting with. I was very happy with it. I was very impressed with it. And I love the idea of being able to control it via Wi-Fi. So you can set up a DVR recording via Wi-Fi or whatever outside of the house. So it's smart. Oh, and I didn't mention this. You can also use your Amazon Echo. So you could tell your Echo, turn on the TV and switch to channel to ESPN because I want to watch the football game. And that's pretty cool too. 8888 Ask Leo, if you've got a better solution – RF, radio frequency universal remote, let us know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Dr. Mom reminds me to tell everybody they have issues with some of the newer mesh Wi-Fi systems, but I think that those will be fixed soon. I'm sure those will be fixed soon. Yeah, Phantasm makes a good point. They may hide screensavers because they don't want you to use one because they drain battery life. Yeah, that may be. Let me try this Cortana thing. Screensaver. No. It doesn't do what you said it would do. Screensaver settings. Good. So it brought me to the right page, but then if you look here, you'll go, well, I don't see screen. You have to look at the bottom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Maddest writer, coming up in about half an hour from now with his Gadget of the Week. But meanwhile, Mason on the line from Corona, California. Hi, Mason.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. Been listening to you for a few years and had a friend that's been listening to you for, I think, since you started on ZDNet or something. Long time.
Long time ago. And it's not sad to say when I started. I've been doing this for even longer.
Oh, man.
Even longer.
I'm a gigantic geek like you. I'm in my 40s, and I've been building and studying computer part, mostly PC for me, though, since they first entered homes in, like, 1993.
So, nice, yeah.
One of the things, I'm going back earlier in the show, you were talking about the screen time being a big issue, and I had an experience with that. First of all, I'm a huge gamer geek, so for a 40-year-old, I get a lot of screen time myself.
You know, I think a lot of times people assume that gamers are teenage boys, and actually, it's middle-aged men. It's people like you who spend the most time, especially with games like, I'm going to guess, Call of Duty.
I play Battlefield. I play a game called War Thunder, which is World War II, planes and tanks against each other.
Yeah.
So I play a lot of those kind of games, yeah. But getting to what I was calling about is my wife and I befriended a single mom who had two kids, and her 13-year-old boy was just out of control. I mean, he didn't even want to go to school. And then he'd be at school, and the teachers would complain that he wouldn't get off his phone in class, you know. And so I kind of got to a point where my wife and I talked, and I was the male role model in his life since she was a single mom, you know. And so my wife and I started talking, and I thought, you know, maybe I could do something about this with just a different approach, because she used to take stuff away and punish him, and then he would get spiteful. He would feel like, well, why am I being punished? I didn't do anything wrong, really, you know. And so my wife said, you know, one of the things I love about you, even though you play a lot, is you never let it get in the way of real life.
Yeah.
If you got somewhere to go or something to do, then I'm never going to use the excuse, no, I want to stay home and play.
Good for you.
And so I,
how do you communicate that to a teenager?
Well, we kind of carried it over to him, and it started with kind of bait. This will sound bad, but we carried.
Well, sometimes you got to mix the carrot and the stick, right?
Yeah. So basically, I just carried it over to him, and I said, Daniel, you know, look, you know, if you want to be successful, I said, I'm a grown man, I'm different than you, but I said, if you want to be successful and have a life and probably get a pretty girl and, you know, and have a lot of friends, I said, you know, one of the things you should do is it's fine to play when you're at home and not doing anything, but if there's something else you can do, get out and do it. And so what we then proceeded to do after he agreed to do this with his mom, look, you know, if it's school time or whatever, or if we have to go somewhere, then I'm not to complain. I'm just to do it and go out and do things. And then this playing is for when I'm at home. And the mom kind of agreed, okay, so when you're at home and your homework's done, I won't complain about you playing anymore. Just don't let this get in the way of other stuff. And so once he agreed, what we initially did, this was the carrot, is set up a whole bunch of days in a row where we were going to do stuff that he wanted to do, that he enjoyed doing. You know, we went fishing and out in the outdoors, and we took him, you know, to
I think that is really the best solution is to find something fun that's off screen, that's outside. You know,
exactly.
I noticed one of the things that I do as a geek is I spend way too much time indoors. And there's a lot of evidence that says that the more time you spend hiking, fishing, walk, just outside, the better your emotional temper will be. The more relaxed you'll be, the happier you'll be. And I noticed that's true for myself, but you forget sometimes. You engaged in something, you know, a game even, and you just forget, I should really just get outside. So mom wasn't so wrong, was she? Go out, get some fresh air.
Yeah, it worked out perfect.
What are you going to do, play video games for a living?
So what happened was, you know, once a week or so of this went by where we were just getting him out of that, then now he's in that habit. So then when it was time to go to the store or just go to a friend's house or something that he normally would have complained about because he wanted to stay home and play, he just didn't. It just, you know, to him, it had kind of taken hold and I'm like, okay, well, we're going to go places and do stuff and I can only play when I'm at home. And it really worked well to this day. Like I said, she actually told me not long ago, she's like, what I really like about this is, he used to stay home and play all day, and then at night, he just watched TV.
Right.
And what really ended up happening now is that TV time turned into play time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Watch TV anymore.
Yeah.
Now that's his video game
time. It always cracks me up because there are games like World of Warcraft where there's fishing in the game. And I know players who spend a lot of time fishing in World of Warcraft. And I have to think, gosh, you know, maybe you should just go out and catch a fish or two, or maybe not even catch one. Just go out and sit in the boat. There are a lot of analogs to this in gaming where if you just went out and did it for real, it might even be more fun. Why don't you try it?
I'm guilty of that. Good. I played an MMO called Rift and did a lot of fishing.
You're grinding life, fishing, you know? Right? I think about people playing a Guitar Hero or a Rock Band, that game where you have a fake, like a plastic fake guitar, and you're trying to play along with real music. And I think the hours that people spend mastering
Guitar Hero. Imagine if they tried to actually spend the same amount of time playing a real guitar. They'd, at the end of it, have a skill.
They'd be a great guitar player.
They could play guitar. I often wonder about that. Hey, it's nice to talk to you. Good suggestions. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like I said, a little different approach than most people are taking with, well, you got to get in an accident. Well, kind of, if you try to make it a positive thing and not like a punishment.
Sure,
then,
make it fun.
Then the kid doesn't spite you, and I think is much more likely to jump on board and maybe think, okay, yeah, this is okay, you know?
There's people in World of Warcraft who cook. They spend all their time cooking, making armor, fishing.
Yeah, and then they sell all that stuff on the auction.
Yeah, they can make some great gold. Not real money. You can spend it anyway. But hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Actually, I guess you could sell it for real money. There used to be a whole economy of gold miners, mostly in China. People would grind out gold in or armor or weapons in games like World of Warcraft, and then sell them for real money online. In fact, there's a really interesting article about Steve Bannon, President Trump's advisor. In between Goldman Sachs and Breitbart News, he started a business, a gold mining business, with the help of Goldman Sachs. They put up the money, and it was quite lucrative until, and this was an interesting epiphany for Steve Bannon, until other gamers got upset and started DDoSing him and causing problems for him. And that's when he started to realize, you know, there's this whole community of gamers who aren't really very socialized. All they do is they play games. They take it very seriously. They have an interesting moral code. And one of the things they didn't, you know, accept was the idea of, you know, mining gold in a game. They thought that was cheating. And their sense of integrity and cheating was so high that they actually put Steve Bannon out of business, but gave him this great insight that maybe we could take these, you know, kind of disenfranchised young men and mobilize them for political gain. And he did so quite successfully. So when you have a generation like that, we don't have a lot of real life skills, but have these very strong motivation and belief, and maybe some pretty good computer skills. It was his insight. They could be put to some good use. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Steve Bannon saw the monster power of angry gamers while farming gold in World of Warcraft. We'll put that in the show notes. Our show today brought to you by... Let me press the button here. Make sure you can see the lower third, as we call it, for Ring. And I want to say the Ring video doorbell, but they do so much more now. This is my Ring video doorbell. This is the original Ring, which I have installed on my door, and I love it. Maybe you've heard. It's been going off a couple... My phone's in my briefcase. Anytime somebody comes to the door or rings the doorbell, I will hear about it on my phone. See, the Ring doorbell is connected to the internet. And it not only can you tell that somebody's in your vicinity, it has a high-def camera, microphone, and speakers. So you could talk to somebody at your doorbell. You could say, yeah, leave that package for me. I'll sign for it tomorrow. I'm in the bathtub. That's always a good ruse if you're at work and you want your package. And you can keep an eye on the package, too. But Ring does so much more. If you go to ring.com/techguy, they've added, and I love these, the new Ring floodlight cams. These things are amazing. So they're basically a Ring doorbell minus a doorbell, but with the addition of two big floodlights. Now, let me talk about these security cameras and what they can do. So the floodlights have motion detectors. They will light up, and you've seen those before. Lots of people have those on the side of their house or out by the barn or the garage. They light up when they detect motion. That's a convenience for you, but it also scares away bad guys. But now they've added this camera, which is awesome. You'll get a notification when somebody walks by, and you can talk to them. You can listen to them. And if you look at the camera and you don't recognize them, you can trigger a 110-decibel siren. And believe me, between you going, hey, what are you doing there, the light shining on them, and the siren... You're safe. Nobody's going to stick around. It's going to scare any bad guy away. It's got smart zoom and panning. You can talk to them. You can see what's going on. So now with the doorbell, you can watch your front door with the Ring security camera and the Ring speakers and the doorbell. And now with the floodlight cam, you can pay attention to what's going on everywhere. Control your perimeter. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017, and we've got a special deal for you. If you go to ring.com/tech guy, up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. You get the doorbell, you get the floodlight cams, one, two, or three, and you save big. They have Ring kits and they have Pro kits. You're still going to save on either one. The original Ring has a battery in it, so you can put it anywhere. It doesn't have to be a wired doorbell. The Pro kit eliminates the battery and takes so it's a little slimmer, and also puts a 1080p camera in there. I have the 720p. It's really good. Either way, it's up to you. One kit per customer, though. Save up to $150. Ring.com/tech guy. I just love this. The Hall of Fame kit. Get it. Put the cameras everywhere. I can show you how cool it is. We were my wife and I were out yesterday. And somebody, her friend, came to our door, and I think I scared her. I heard her ringing the doorbell, and so I said, "Hey, what do you want?" I think I scared her, which was maybe not such a bad thing. I said, "We'll be back later." Let me see if I can find her. Here it is. This is a little amusing anecdote from my life. There she is at the doorbell, and I started talking to her, and I think I scared her a little bit. I love this. I love it that I can always see. This is all the motion. Somebody's coming or going. Plus, you have a record. Oh, that's Lisa going back. See, you can hear it. You can see it. And if I wanted to, I could scare the willies out of them. Ring. I love it. Ring.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go to Los Angeles. Tamar is next. Hi, Tamar.
Hi, Leo. I hope you can help me. I've kind of been talking with people in the chat room about this in Eternity. And my Alexa, I have two Alexa Dots. I've had them for about 3 weeks.
Do me a favor, call them Echoes, just so we don't set off other people's Echoes.
Okay.
When you use the A word, I've learned this in life. Okay. Probably wouldn't work with you, but if I say the A word, it'll set off their Echoes. So so you have two dots. Yep.
And I'll be listening to iHeartRadio,
yeah.
And they just stop. And people have been saying something else in the house must be on, but I use her.
No, I've seen that happen too. That's a stream stopping probably. So I've had that happen to me too. And it could be that it's hearing something say stop. You know, if you say Echo stop, it'll stop. But it's more likely just you're listening to streaming radio. And if the stream... Yeah, but it's streaming radio. And if it pauses for any length of time, you know, you run out of bits and it buffers. Sometimes the Echo will just say, yeah, I guess I give up. And I know now that that's happening because I got one of those Echo shows, the one that has the screen. And it'll put the error message up. Stream stopped. So
what can we do? I mean, I bought
nothing. You just start it up again. Just start it up again. I don't know if that's iHeartRadio. One reason it might happen is, and I know Pandora does this, is that remember every time you play a song, they have to pay a penny or a 1/1,000,000th of a penny to the artist. And what they don't want you to do is leave it on and leave the house. So I've noticed this with other streaming services. They'll stop. And they figure, well, if you really want to keep listening, you'll start it again.
But it wakes me up, and within like 8, turned off 3 times, and I've told it 3 times. And it's not like I listen to music. I'm listening to people talking. So,
well, how long does it go before it disconnects?
Well, like yesterday, it did, in the first 15 minutes, I woke up at 9:45, and in the first 15 minutes, it stopped 3 times.
Oh, it's up. You're cutting in and out, but I gather that it stopped 3 times in the first 15 minutes. Yeah, that's not normal.
Yes.
Tell me about your internet connection. What kind of internet connection do you have?
I have AT&T U-verse, and I've been told by the technicians here in my house it's really strong, and they're both.
I'm not a fan of AT&T U-verse, I have to say. Well, who's doing your phone service, AT&T U-verse? You notice how it's cutting in and out all the time? Maybe you don't notice, but it's cutting in and out on me all the time.
I'm on T-Mobile on my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
So that's not AT&T.
Okay, good. So the chat room suggested you when you listen to other music services, does it do that?
Well, I only listen to iHeart. Yeah, Dr. Mom told me I should try TuneIn.
Yeah, so try TuneIn. You can listen to this show, for instance, not through through the local radio station KFI. KFI is on iHeart. But if you wanted to try it with TuneIn, you could say to the Echo, listen to the Tech Guy on TuneIn and see if that stops. And if it does, then my guess would be it's U-verse.
It's U.
Yeah, that would be my guess. I mean, I can't promise you. I don't think it's the Echo Dot doing it. But the best way to find out is to listen to another stream. Now, again, your streams are all... When you're listening to iHeart or TuneIn, you're not listening to the radio. You're listening to an internet stream of the radio. I know you know that, but this is the kinds of things that can happen with internet streams. U-verse, it's not just speed, it's also reliability. And lately I've noticed with the big internet service providers, I have this problem with Comcast too, it's not consistent. It stops every once in a while and starts up again. So, you know, I think the chat room's advice is probably pretty good in this case, Tamar. Try another service, see if it happens with that. I don't know if that's the Dot. There are other ways to listen to internet radio, and another way to test this would be to try listening to iHeartRadio on your computer or your laptop or your tablet and see if the same thing happens. Because the problem may be that the Dot is more sensitive if the stream drops out for even a second or two, the Dot gives up. But just see if you're getting buffering. It's an interesting issue. I don't think it's the Dot. It could be, but you got two different ones doing it. I think it's much more likely either the internet or those services that are doing it. Cheryl's in Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi, Cheryl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I have a problem that has everyone baffled. Toshiba, Charter, Best Buy. When I type a comma, when I start my emails, I can put a comma in the subject box. And it's normal. The minute I get to my email, I started out, write a couple words, print a comma. It looks like tiny equal signs.
Oh.
Yes. And the only way...
You cannot type a comma in your email program.
Correct. A normal comma. But if I go to the large print, then it's fine. You know, the large letters, the large comma, everything's fine.
Yeah. It's a font. It's a typeface problem. The typeface you're using is damaged and doesn't have a comma, which is a bad kind of damage. What program? Are you using a program for your email or are you using a browser?
A browser. This is a one-year-old Toshiba.
And you're using which browser?
Microsoft Edge.
Okay, so you're in Edge and you're going to your email program. That's interesting. That's an unusual problem.
This has got everyone baffled.
Well, I know what's wrong, and that's what you're going to get if the typeface is damaged. But because you're not using a program, you're using the browser. It's something about and what email service do you use?
Well, Charter is my provider.
And you're using Charter's email.
Yes.
Well, it might be worth a call to Charter. What is probably happening is there's something. So the little, it's only the little typeface. The big one's fine.
Correct. And I also need to tell you this. I have had four different people take over my computer, try everything they could think of, and it did not get corrected.
Yeah, well, it may not be able to be corrected. So here's how, just so you understand how it works. When you're using your browser, the browser is taking instructions from the website, in this case, Charter's email website, about how to display text and in what font to use.
And sometimes the browser even gets the font from the website. It might be the case in this situation. Sometimes it uses a font built in. What you might try, and it might solve it, is to go into the browser settings. This is kind of complicated. I'm not sure I want to make you do this, but you can change the default fonts. It's interesting. And it doesn't. You don't have this issue anywhere else. Just in Edge, and only in Edge when it's on the Charter email site, right? You could type a comma
any place,
anywhere else, yeah, in your browser, even, and it wouldn't do this. That's very interesting. Yeah, my guess is that Charter is sending you the font and it's damaged, rather than the font in the local font being damaged. There's something going on with the way Charter's representing that text. And in other words, the answer would be with Charter.
Yes, well, I've gone that route.
And they don't know. They know it's not us.
Mm-mm.
Hmm. That is a very odd thing. I mean, I understand the mechanism of it, but I don't understand the source of it.
They have never heard of this.
Well, yeah, but if you think about it, I could see how it could. I understand how it could happen. Let me think about this for a second and see if I can come up with an answer for you. Chat room has some interesting solutions, too. Of course, you can always use a different browser, see if the same thing happens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, the comma works in Note. So the comma works in Notepad just fine. But see, the Notepad's using a different font than your browser is when it's going to Charter. It's an interesting question. And have you used other browsers? Have you tried it with Internet Explorer, for instance?
Yeah. Yep, I did that at Best Buy the other night, yep.
And it works with Internet Explorer or not?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
And have you tried it with Chrome? Wait a minute, you did it at Best Buy. You brought the Toshiba to Best Buy, or?
Yes.
Oh, I see. You brought it into the Geek Squad.
Yep.
And they went, I don't know.
he said it was in the Charter setting.
That's what it strikes me as. But let me see if there's a way you can override. I'm going to look at the settings in Edge and see if there's a way you can override the font choice that Charter's making. I'm going to go in Advanced Settings, see if there's any. Some browsers allow you to specify the fonts, but this doesn't look like this one does. Or specify what we call the CSS, the style sheet. It is definitely coming from Spectrum Charter wrong. You know, they're sending you the wrong thing.
Well, I'm hoping this doesn't start with another key.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's related to the key you're hitting, because you can hit the comma key anywhere else and you still get a comma sign, right?
Right.
It's only in that website. So what happens is that key is sending out a code, and the code is being misinterpreted by your browser when it's on one particular site. If it were the key, it would be sending the wrong code, but it's not. It's sending the right code because it works everywhere else. So what's happening is either the browser is misinterpreting the key, or more likely, the typeface, because it doesn't happen in every in the bigger typeface, it works fine. It's
yes.
only that one typeface.
Yep.
That typeface, either the comma is damaged, which is possible, or the image you're getting is an image of, well, the typeface is damaged. The question is where the typeface is coming from. Is it coming from Charter or is it coming from you? Here's a good one. Go into Notepad, type a bunch of commas, then go into your browser in the email and paste it. Copy it from the Notepad and paste it in the browser and see if you get commas or a bunch of equal signs. If you get a bunch of equal signs, then that proves what I'm saying, which is that the font is damaged. And that is either coming from you locally, most likely, because if Charter were having this problem, it would be happening not just to you, but to everybody.
Yeah.
So it's probably that this font is damaged. Now, the problem is I don't know what typeface they're using, but it's probably a damaged typeface.
I find it interesting, too, that my
7-year-old Toshiba never did this.
No, it's just that. It's in fact, it's just that one machine. It's this laptop particularly. It's not that's not working right. And I'm wondering how you can restore a damaged typeface on Windows. Windows 10?
Yes.
I think now I've kind of convinced myself it's a damaged typeface. You can restore. Oh, here's one thing to try. This is weird. But I'm going to paste a link in the show notes, and I'm going to tell you this, and then I'm going to have to run.
Okay.
But I'm going to paste a link in the show notes. This is kind of, there is in the control panel, there's a fonts control panel, and in the font settings, there's restore default font settings. And that might help you.
Okay.
So what we're, I got to run, unfortunately, but that's the trick, and I'm going to put it at techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just was still on the phone with Cheryl, and I think we have one possible solution. After talking with her some more during the break, I'm pretty convinced that what has happened is that that little typeface she's using in that email program is damaged. And so what we want to do is restore it. There is in the control panel, if you go to the font control panel, so if you just type, hit Windows key and type font, and go to the font settings, there is a restore font settings. It might fix it. It might fix it. If the font mapping has been damaged, that'll fix it. If the font itself is damaged, the typeface, I use typeface and font interchangeably, even though technically I think there's some difference. But if the font and typeface are damaged, and or typeface are damaged, that would require restoring it. We're going to put a link in the show notes, thanks to Gollum in our chat room, to a site called 10forums.com that says how to rebuild the font cache. I think that might fix it as well. So I think we've narrowed it down to a local problem on that Toshiba and the font or the font cache or the font settings. Now, I did say twice now, go to the show notes. Let me tell you where those are. TechGuyLabs.com, Cheryl. TechGuyLabs.com. We've got James DeRuvo there. He's writing this all down. He will put the links from the chat room up, and you might want to just read those and go do those things. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, I take you now to Disneyland, USA, the home of Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And by the way, we're talking about the iGen, how they never leave the house. Dick never leaves the house either.
I don't. No. I sit here 7 days until you come back.
Waiting for me to call.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, playing with every gizmo and gadget under the sun, and every week he brings us one. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. We call him that with affection, by the way.
Oh, good. I wondered.
Not an insult.
I finally got an answer after 11 years.
What do you got?
I'm going to talk about I rarely talk about websites. I put a bunch of them at gizwiz.biz under the tech guy because we have coming soon a total solar eclipse.
Yay!
And I already looked it up. You in Petaluma are going to see a 77.3% eclipse.
Oh.
Dennis, I, and Myra in the city are going to see a 70%.
Well, at least we're better than you.
Yeah, but you're better than me. But the best website is Eclipse 2017. NASA.gov. And what I was looking for, Leo, was to buy glasses for the eclipse.
Yes, because so, you may not look at the sun with your naked eye. You'll burn your eyes.
Exactly.
And it's permanent damage.
Yes. So a month ago, I bought a bunch of them on Deal of the Day. I don't even remember the website. And I started to think, you know, I know this is crazy talk, but sometimes things on the web are not what they seem. There you go. Are those official glasses?
Yes. And one thing I got to tell you, when you wear them, you can't see a thing unless you look at the sun. And then there's a dot. These are.
Well, the great thing is when you put them on, you can have an eclipse any time of day or night.
Yes. It eclipses everything.
Exactly. So the thing to look for, and mine do say this.
Yes.
The thing to look for, according to NASA, is that it says meets requirement ISO, this is all on the website, ISO 12312-2.
That's right. Filters for direct observation of the sun. This meets ISO requirements, these These silly ones I'm holding up. You know why I have these? Because our staff, many of our staff members are going to Oregon because they want to see the total eclipse.
Oh,
so they're going north.
Gosh.
Actually, in your case, you'd go south, and they have these glasses so they can look. And I even lent my lens, my long lens, to John Jammer B. He got a special welding glass filter for the camera because he doesn't want to damage the camera either. So
wow! Yeah.
Now I hesitate to say this, but just between you and me, when the sun is fully eclipsed, you can look at it. The problem is, it's only fully eclipsed for a minute. It's hard to tell unless you look at it. So you really need these glasses, even during totality. You should have them.
You absolutely should. And Dennis and I are going south, too. We live on 82nd. We're gonna walk to 79.
Oh, then you'll get 70.002% eclipse.
That's what we figure.
You can get them at Best Buy. You're going to see these eclipse glasses everywhere. These ones that I've got here.
But they're selling out. They're selling all the ones recommended.
Out, yeah.
You know what? I went back on Amazon, and NASA said that ones from Lund were approved. So I reordered more glasses from Amazon.
Yeah.
Just so I have
things,
something.
Though, these shouldn't be expensive. They're just paper glasses with practically, you know, impermeable film.
Yeah, the ones I have are even cheaper. They look like if you're an older person, when you go to 3D movies, that's what they look like.
Or you went to the eye doctor and they put drops in your eyes. They're
not
attractive.
I'm finding a lot of places are sold out now. I only paid $1 each, and now they're $2 each.
Yeah.
So
I worry that you people will try to do it with things that aren't actually safe. So make sure you get the ISO certified safe eclipse glasses, and they should be so dark that you really don't see anything unless you look at
the sun. You're absolutely right. I didn't realize that until I put them on, and I thought, I see. I am even looking into if I look into the spotlights on the ceiling, I see two dots for the two spotlights.
That's about all you're going to see for the sun.
Oh, but then I'll sit right here and do it.
Yeah. All right, Dick DiBartolo, you're absolutely right. This is a great site. It's eclipse2017.nasa.gov. The eclipse is coming August 23rd.
August 21st.
First. Oh, gosh. Don't go look at August 23rd. There'll be nothing to see. Nothing to see. And, you know, I remember as a kid making pinhole cameras, you know, poke a pinhole
in a shoebox.
And things like that. But you just really have to be careful. I think everybody's probably hearing these warnings over and over again. So be careful. Be careful.
Good.
Thank you, Dickie D. Go to GizWiz
for
more information. GizWiz.biz, GizWiz.biz. He's got lots of links there. You can also play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for identifying a mystery picture, a close-up of a gizmo or a gadget. I have one here. Can you tell me what this is, Dick? No, you can't. I know you can't.
Get it at the doctor's
office? Yeah. No, this is a Steripen Traveler water filter. It was sent to me by Scott Kastner at Emergency Preparedness Service at
stick it in contaminated water
and it will kill any bacteria. It won't kill viruses, prevent you from getting lead poisoning. So but be careful. But still, this is a lot of travelers bring this if they're, you know, in a country where they're not sure if the water's safe. You can use this to that's my gadget for the day.
Yeah, are you taking it to France?
Yeah, you never know.
You don't trust them?
I'm going to put it in the wine. Mad Magazine's maddest writer, GizWiz.biz. Don't forget GizWiz.tv for his podcast. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
Take care. We've run out of time. I'm sad to say. But here's the good news. I'll be back again to talk high tech. And in the meanwhile, while I'm gone, you've got the comfort and security of the Tech Guy Labs website. All the links, everything we talk about is up there. Plus your comments, too. There's no charge, no fee. We do ask for you to log in using your Twitter or Facebook or Google account, but only if you're leaving comments. That's just to prevent spam. Thanks to our musical director, Michael Cozio, for a great job today. Our phone answering human being, Kim Schaffer, she did a great job. And thanks most of all to you for hanging out with me. I hope you'll come back again. We can do it all over. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.